Welcome to Character Explorations, a podcast production of the Wentz Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque. I'm Annalee Ward, and our guest today is Dr. Daniel Fleming, Assistant Professor of Computer Studies. He is the author of the article, Attention and Digital Mourning, an article in the Journal of Character and, with this particular issue's topic of inevitability. This essay is available online at dbq.edu/went. That's dbq.edu/WENDT. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Annalee.
Thanks for being here today to walk us through a little bit about your reflections in this essay. As part of the research team on character and inevitability, you took on a heavy topic, grieving, particularly in the digital age. Will you set the stage for us by sharing maybe your contrasting examples?
Sure. So this idea, or the paper started with my sister's boyfriend's death 3 years ago. He was killed in a single car accident, and even though we were 1,000 miles away, we knew within a few hours that he had died, and my parents were able to get on a plane and join my sister. Immediately, the rest of us here were able to mourn with her via Zoom, via text messaging and video face calls. Compare that to my grandfather's brother, who died back in the 50s. He was killed in Ecuador in the remote jungles, and my grandfather was living in South Africa. And so it took almost 2 weeks for a single telegram to arrive with just 5 words on it saying that his brother was missing and they didn't know more. He never was able to attend a funeral. The family wasn't able to mourn with him. So much has changed. So much is different. But humans don't evolve, don't change at that speed. Our emotions, our need for closure is still hardwired at a very slow rate. And so this acceleration of the world got me thinking about the way we mourn as the world gets smaller, both in time and in space, because of the digital age.
Thanks for that. I such a clear example of change in really a short amount of time. So when we think about mourning in those different situations, you contrast two paths. And then in there, you've raised the terms about mindfulness and attentiveness. Can we use those terms interchangeably when we're starting to think about mourning?
I don't think so. And that's the reason I make the differentiation in the paper. Mindfulness, as it's popularly understood, is very self-centered. It's being aware of your body. So the typical mindfulness exercise is focus on your breath. Like that's what you'll hear in podcasts or popular level treatments. That's internal. Attentiveness takes your attention, instead of being internal to myself, is external. It's outside. It's to somebody else. So when we're mourning, we are not alone, or we should not be alone. It's not healthy to be alone. So you need to have people around you who can mourn with you. So there needs to be an attention to from those people to the person that's mourning. They're the ones that need to be having less mindfulness, more attentiveness, because they're looking at the person who is grieving and helping them work through their grief.
As you think about that attention in the mourning process, I'd like you to say a little bit more about what you mean by attentiveness. I mean, is it simply me staring at you and saying, I'm here for you? What does attention look like?
Sure.
Either for the mourner, because I think you make that distinction, attentiveness on the part of those who are mourning, as well as for those who stand alongside or come alongside them.
Mm-hmm. So that's a great question. Attentiveness for the mourner. Let's start with the person who is the closest to the loss. And I should make the point here that mourning isn't just death. We mourn loss of abilities as we get older. We mourn loss of friendships when someone moves away or a relationship ends. Or any of those things is a time of mourning. So it's not just dying, even though my opening examples were both death.
That's a really important point to raise, because we sometimes think that my feelings of distress, of mourning, shouldn't be there when my friend moved away or when I broke my foot or whatever.
But it's still a loss. It's a loss of the relationship you've built, and it's torn the fabric of your social world apart. There's a hole there now.
Yes.
Nicholas Wolterstorff calls it a gap, and I use his quote several times. And we've got to figure out how to work around that gap, or if possible, fill the gap. Some gaps can't be filled, but sometimes they can. And so the person who's mourning needs to start by paying attention to what's going on within them. What are they needing? How are their emotions playing out? How are their emotions impacting their daily life? Because if you're not aware of it, you're going to come up with coping strategies, and they may not be healthy. We see anger management issues is one. If people don't pay attention to the grief they're going through, then they're going to lash out. It's going to leak out the side, as a counselor friend of mine likes to say. So the mourner needs to pay attention to themselves. Those around them need to pay attention to what the mourner needs. At times, someone who's mourning needs people there, as I said, just to sit, to be alongside, to cover for them. You're going to be less able as you mourn to do your daily routines. So you need someone to come alongside and do things, someone to come alongside and sit. But sometimes you also need to be left alone. There's that attentiveness as well. So it's also not just physical coming alongside of. It is emotional, psychological coming alongside of. You can do this from a distance now. And that's the beauty of online mourning, is I can come alongside my sister and give her a call and say, hey, I'm thinking about you. Or if I think she's going through a rough time and doesn't want the interruption, I'll send her a text, and then she can choose the time to look at it and to respond. And so we have this wider range of ability to respond. And if we're paying attention to what the person going through mourning needs, we can hopefully be more effective at helping them as they go through the mourning process.
You've raised the digital environment we live in, and you've been looking at this. You've seen some trends. What kinds of things are you seeing with how people are being present or not being present through digital means?
So it has both helped and hurt the mourning process that we are always online. On the helpful side, we're seeing entire websites, entire communities building around grief, shared griefs. So there's a website that's very popular here in the US called Caring Bridge. It's really designed for families who are going through medical problems to be able to post updates to those who can't be in the hospital room with them. And especially when your major hospital, like us in Dubuque, our major hospital is an hour away. So if you're an hour away living in the hospital, this is communication back home. And we see those pages being kept up even after an event has ended badly with a death or a major loss, and the families reflecting on that loss. Those who love them and care are coming and posting comments and memories, and from all over the world. So one page I found, I don't know the person, but this woman, Emily, was in an accident and then died 8 days later, over a year ago. This was February 2023. Her family posted all the updates as she went through surgeries. And then after she died, there's been a community that keeps her memory alive. At her funeral, they had little cards that they gave out with Emily's picture on it. And as the family travels, as the friends travel, they take the little card and they take pictures with it. And they're posting these updates back to the page because Emily apparently loved to travel. And so it's keeping the memory alive, keeping a community together, and seeing some joy and hopefully healing come out of it. So that's the positive. Things like that are happening. More negatively, we're seeing that a lot of the internet is being dominated by a very small set of websites. So we all live our lives inside a few apps. Twitter, it's now X, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. These dominate our lives. And when they come to dominate our lives like that, we see people then taking advantage of the platforms to make money, which makes sense. You gotta live somehow. So influencers become a thing. But when you're trying to post heartfelt mourning, and that gets fed to me on, say, my Facebook page, and as I'm scrolling down, it's advertisement, influencer post, joke, heartfelt mourning post, political rant, there's this shock in there, this distinction of it goes from the banal to the deeply meaningful suddenly, and that can be shocking. It can lead us to treat that deeply meaningful as just as lightly as we treat the rest of the stuff that's on social media. The flip side is it can be an unwanted reminder. So someone goes out and posts happy birthday to a deceased friend's page, and then that shows up on my page. I may not be in a place to process that grief. I'm on Facebook to see updates about my friend's kids, not be reminded of the death of someone I loved. And it can have negative effects too. So the internet's brought us good things. It brings together communities and allows us to keep memory alive, but it also has exacerbated, has made worse the process of this commodification almost of mourning.
Even as you spoke, it reminded me of some of the critiques of television, particularly Neil Postman's critique, in Amusing Ourselves to Death. Now yep. This, you're watching something serious and in breaks the commercial. So we're still seeing that phenomenon, and yet people are trying to use the medium for good.
Yes.
Do you see any other examples of kinds of practices online, for all of us to be aware of?
There's an interesting fusion of the digital world and the physical lived space that we're seeing in mourning, when the event that spawned grief is very public. So I'm thinking here of more recently things like George Floyd, or Kobe Bryant's death in the last few years. And then if we go back farther, 9/11, other mass shootings that we see, unfortunately, all too frequently, the internet is being used to organize these in-person events of mourning. And sometimes those take the form of protest to express rage, which is part of the mourning process and is very healthy to express when a wrong has been done, or to express grief. So the internet's used to get a group of people together. Say Kobe Bryant died in California, but a group of mourners gets together in Chicago, and they create a physical memorial to him there. The coordination was done online. So there's this combination that is enabling more people to mourn together more fully. Of course, the flip side, there's always good and bad. So the flip side is, well, that's getting co-opted by powerful voices that don't care so much about the mourning, but about their own agenda. And so we end up seeing what start as mourning protests for George Floyd degenerate into mass vandalism, which is an expression of rage, but maybe not the most helpful expression of rage. Or we see a gathering for remembering an individual like Kobe degenerate into something else, a party or something that's not as appropriate to mourning. So there's this combination. There's the good and the bad.
So what advice would you have for all of us as we all have the inevitability of loss and mourning in our lives? What would you have any advice for us regarding our online presence?
Yes. Pay attention. Honestly, we need to slow down, because at the other end of that tweet or post or TikTok video comment is a real person, and a real person who is facing a battle, a real person who is mourning a loss. And what we may think is humorous and flippant, or however we're looking at it, may be deeply inappropriate to what they need. And if we can slow down and consider the other person, I think that would solve a lot of our problems online. Just, there is a real person at the other end of this comment, not just a computer screen. And that's hard when you can't see the person. We're sitting across from each other, and so I can see your reactions as I'm talking, and I know whether I'm being appropriate or inappropriate. But if I were trying to do this via two microphones in two separate rooms, even if we were just in next door offices where we can't see each other, there's that barrier. If we can pay attention to our own motivations, our own tone, how we could possibly be misinterpreted, because the written word doesn't carry all the inflections of voice, all the movements of my hands and face, it's very easy to misinterpret a tweet, because there's no context for it. There's no personal embodiment to it. And so we need to be aware of that and be more cautious in what we're doing and saying online.
Thank you for that. Friends, on or offline, facing the pain of mourning is difficult and also inevitable. But as long as we're alive, we're going to encounter death, and we have to find a way through the complicated morass of emotions. So Dan, thank you for calling us to attention, calling us to practice attentiveness with ourselves and with others as we mourn. Are there any last words you'd like to leave us with?
Making a conscious choice to recapture attention, to become more attentive, to be the sort of person who can then give the gift of attention to others, it's possible. It's something we can learn. A person trained to be attentive day to day in the small things is going to fall back on that habit, on that virtue in mourning, just as readily as we all fall back on forums or Reddit or Instagram, because it's where we are comfortable. A world populated by attentive people will be a place where mourning and accompanying those who are mourning will bring healing from anguish and readjustment into the new reality that has that hole in the middle of it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Our guest today has been Dr. Dan Fleming, Assistant Professor of Computer Studies, and I'm Annalee Ward for Character Explorations from the Wentz Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque.